Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey everyone, I'm Josh Radner, and I am so excited to tell you about How We Made Your Mother, a rewatch podcast looking back at How I Met Your Mother. And I'm here with Craig Thomas, who co-created the show along with Carter Bays. Hi, Craig.
Hey, Josh. Somehow it has been 20 years since the show premiered. I'm going to check the math on that. 10 years since it went off the air, and we thought that made this a perfect time to look back, see what the hell we did, and why the show still seems to resonate with fans around the world today.
Follow and listen to How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to Jeffrey Wright and Company. My name is Jeffrey Wright. You can follow me on Twitter on X at jwright929 ESPN. As always, you can listen on the radio dial 92.9 FM or 680 AM, but we're now not only streaming on the Odyssey app where you can stream anytime, anywhere, you can even listen on demand. We are also streaming on both iHeartRadio and TuneIn Radio. George Ruggiero is the producer of the program. You can follow him on Twitter on X at KingGeorge94. George, good day, sir.
Good afternoon. As I have to say every week now, Tuesday through Thursday, we've got different things for Cerrito Entertainment going on with yours truly tonight, Music Bingo, down in South Haven at 10th inning. Come on down. It's a good time.
10th inning this week, or I should say 10th inning tonight, I assume Dan McGinnis.
Tomorrow and Thursday.
Tomorrow and Thursday. So,
sir.
10th inning for some Music Bingo down in South Haven. Go check out George if you're down in the area. My co-host, as he is each and every Tuesday and Friday, although I don't know if we're going to be on island time on Friday. He, of course, is the host of VSiN Primetime, VSiN's college football betting podcast, the VSiN Betting Tailgate Show. Also, make sure you are downloading the VSiN College Football Betting Guide. It is available now, $9.99. Follow him on Twitter on X at @1TimMurray. Aloha.
Aloha. We will be.
Did you organize Rich Eisen? Nah, I guess that was Larry Beal, wasn't it? Aloha is Larry Beal.
Aloha means goodbye,
yeah.
Right? That was Larry Beal.
Mm-hmm.
Mahalo.
That's Adam Carolla.
Oh, I'm not too up to date on
you. Didn't listen to Loveline growing up?
Not really. Yeah, that was pretty much.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Watched a little. What was that show?
The Man Show.
The Man Show.
Oh,
every once in a while, throw that on. Yeah, man, I'm ready to go. I guess I'm ready to go. We'll find out. Wheels up Thursday morning. I've got like 3 radio hits on Friday. I'm
all right. Can I guess your route?
Sure.
All right, you got to tell me what airline.
Hawaiian.
All right, so are you going Vegas?
Vegas. I'm direct, baby. Come on now.
Oh, really? You'll have a direct?
Yeah.
I didn't realize
Dude,
that.
We're the ninth island. I could fly anywhere. I could fly to Kauai. I could fly to Maui. I've flown to Maui twice on Southwest. Actually, once Hawaiian, once Southwest. Oh, you could, if you come to Las Vegas, you can get to Hawaii.
I just would have thought though. I know obviously everywhere flies into Vegas, even though what y'all are just like a Southwest focused city and an Allegiant focused city, but like you're not like a hub for one of the major airlines.
We're a big Southwest city. We have a fair share of Hawaiian flights out of here, but yeah, straight into Oahu, 7:38. I think there's like 4 or 5 flights a day into Oahu from Vegas. Oh yeah, baby. We're the ninth island. We got plenty of opportunities on multiple airlines to get out to the islands.
Are there really eight islands?
I think so.
I thought there were five.
Well, there's small ones like Molokai.
Okay.
Yeah, those the ones. I think Molokai is the one that they don't.
They don't even
us.
Count it.
They're like you. Well, there was.
Oh, they don't tell us about it because it's nice.
Yeah. Well, no, it's one of those. I think that's the one I'm talking about. There's one that you could see from Maui, and they don't want anything to do with us mainlanders coming out there. But yeah, there's a bunch of them. I've only been to two. I've only been to Maui and Oahu, and the last time I was in Oahu was 1997, and about a week, about 2 weeks before the Murray family departed for Hawaii, I broke my leg.
Yeah. Nicely done there.
Had a thigh-high cast.
Yeah, that's a good spot. That's a good spot for a thigh-high cast.
Yeah, so I did get pity, and I got pity tickets to the Maui Invitational, oh, which is kind of cool. So I got to go to Lahaina Civic Center and check out, I know it was Duke, because I was a Duke fan as a kid.
Of course
so
you were.
It was Duke. It was...
Did you slap the floor with them?
I want to say it was Missouri, Kentucky, and Arizona, I want to say, 1997. So it was pretty loaded. The Lahaina Civic Center, man. I would love to go back. That is a tiny barn. That is for sure.
It always feels like it gets toasty. I always feel like we can see the condensation on the TV cameras when the crowd
soft
gets
big. Soft rims. Oh, yeah. You got to love those soft rims out there at the Lahaina Civic Center. And fortunately, it was... with the devastating fires just a couple of years ago, Lahaina Civic Center did not get affected, thankfully. So we still get that lovely barn. You know, discussion for another day is slowly but surely these amazing tournaments are going to get destroyed with this NIL tournament out here in Vegas. You know, it's going to be 32 teams next
year.
I'm
willing to give some of these historic venues the benefit of the doubt, not in the sense that, oh, they can get away with not paying guys. I'm willing to give them the benefit of the doubt that they can cobble up enough sponsorship money to stay competitive. But I think, like, I would imagine.
Just the teams going to these tournaments are just like, really? That. I mean, it wasn't that long ago. The battle for Atlantis was like elite, and
I mean, it was pushing Maui.
It really was. And this year, I mean, if you look at its field, it is, as their website is stupid and doesn't let me show you what the field is. It's Colorado State, St. Mary's, South Florida, Vanderbilt, VCU, Virginia Tech, Western Kentucky, Wichita State.
I was trying to count how many teams. So Colorado State has a new coach.
Medved lost to Minnesota, left to Minnesota.
did South Florida?
They
did not promote the interim, right? Because I think they opened it up. I want to say Stansberry threw his name back in the hat.
Brian Hodgson. Yes.
They got the Arkansas State guy. They hired the Arkansas State coach.
Yeah. So you've got. All right, so you've got Mountain West, WCC, AAC, American.
Thank you, the American.
SEC, A-10, barely. ACC, what's Western Kentucky, CUSA?
CUSA.
And Wichita State's...
Wichita State is the American as well.
Oh, that's right. So you got two American teams down there. Yikes. And then the Maui this year, Arizona State, Boise State, Chaminade. NC State, Texas, USC, Washington State. Not terrible, but it doesn't really get the blood going, does it?
No, I mean, I think you're 100% right. I mean,
was it the Maui last year where Memphis was a part of it? It had like seven ranked teams. It was insane.
Oh, Maui last year was great. Memphis, UConn, and then Memphis got Michigan State. I mean, that really set the tone for him. Auburn, dominated that tournament.
Well,
they had Iowa State. They
had questions about UConn and be like, oh, I don't know about UConn, right?
Yeah. It turns out we weren't wrong.
We had UNC, Dayton, Iowa State, Auburn, Michigan State, Colorado, who stunk, UConn, and Memphis.
Yeah, no, it was a very good tournament last year. I mean, especially consider with Maui, they kind of have to book in advance. And it's much harder, you know, now because who the heck knows what anyone's roster is going to look like a year from now. But there are a couple other things I wanted to discuss with you. of course, we've got to discuss the, you know, if you don't have 24 or 28 teams in your playoff, do you really have a playoff? So we got to discuss that. We'll do that next segment. We'll get into the list. We've had a bunch of starting quarterbacks named, both college and pro. Also, last night, I wanted to discuss with Tim, I did stay up to watch the Rich Eisen Nostalgia Sports Center, and I had a couple of thoughts that I wanted to run by you.
Yep.
We'll also get into a couple of comments made by Greg Olson about some of these production meetings, what I think is very hilarious because it's about coaching. So I want to get into that. But I enjoy using you as the sounding board for anytime we get in a topic for the Memphis Grizzlies that's very in the weeds. Because I think on these types of topics, I think it is helpful to not have all of the context. Do you know what I mean? Like, you can kind of come in and just be like, all right, give me the broad strokes, and then you can kind of issue a judgment one way or the other. All right, you're with me?
I'm with you.
Okay, so Sam Hardiman, who will be on the Jeff Calkins show tomorrow morning. Sam, one of my buddies, does a good job.
Not to be confused with Sam Hartman.
Correct, who also played last night in a game that the last 20 minutes, Joe Buck and Troy were just griping about how slow the clock was moving, which... I was very appreciative of, because you and I have both been there when you are calling a really bad game and that clock just won't move.
I mean, for about 5 years, sorry to hijack the segment here.
No.
For about 5 years, I was on the then Redskins post-game show. I was just the update anchor. I wasn't the host. And our host was as thorough as it comes. And on that week four of the preseason finale, and I'm there at like 2 a.m. I'm like, dude.
Is he wanting to like read all the names of the guys that won't make the team, but make sure he like got their names out on the broadcast?
Yeah, but I will say thank you to Sam Hartman. You made me sweat, but I did take an in-game under last night, and then he threw a pick.
After like the 28-point barrage?
No, so I took it when it got to 14-14.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying, when they put up 28 points in like the first quarter.
Yeah, so I took the under, and then I'm like, all right, we're feeling good. And then he throws a horrendous pick before the end of the first half to make it 28-14.
Yeah, I think that evened out, because they could have... I thought Browning's strip sack was close.
Yeah.
And that would have been a touch.
Like,
the last touchdown at the end of the half, that was a killer.
But we got there, because the second half we had, what, 6 points?
Yeah, so we got home.
We were all right. All right. Back to your point. Sorry, I disrupted it.
Okay, so I like bringing you in because these are complicated issues with a lot of variables that are moving, as they would say. Okay, so Sam has written this over at the Daily Memphian. The city of Memphis and the Memphis Grizzlies have a plan for spending $550 million on renovations to FedEx Forum and an understanding of a long-term lease agreement to keep the team in Memphis beyond 28-29, according to public records and multiple people familiar with the matter. Okay, overall, that paragraph, that's the opening paragraph, I'm kind of all good. You with me?
Yep.
Because, again, while it's not nothing signed, there is an agreement that they're working towards the lease. Okay. Second paragraph. The city and the NBA franchise have discussed a renovation funding proposal that would minimize the amount of public money at risk if the Grizzlies left town before the end of the second long-term lease. The first lease, which the team is currently operating, expires in 2029. Your gut reaction when I read that?
The Grizzlies are leaving.
Okay, so I'll add some context, because I don't know how people can read that and not have that reaction. What I will say is,
it feels a little bit like the ACC's agreement.
Yeah.
The buyout's really high, but in 2030, you all can leave at a palatable price.
I would say this. It's not quite as, whenever you have like a conference, when they let Texas keep the Longhorn Network and then keep a larger portion of money, like, it's all in that vein. What I would say is the difference with this one is, I think what the Grizzlies actually want from the city is one of those things that needs time. And I do think this buys them some time. Because the way that I understand it is there are going to be conditions in the lease that if the Grizzlies meet the if the city and the Grizzlies meet those conditions, the Grizzlies are locked into longer terms of the lease, which is what everybody's rooting for. Now, it's also important to note we don't know what those stipulations will be. Sometimes you'll read those stipulations, you're like, they're never getting there. So what got me thinking, though, is I overall view this as a positive because I do think they need time, and I think they needed to buy some time. I think this buys time. They have certain money in the cash coffers, and so I think overall the Grizzlies have displayed a working relationship, and everybody's been operating under good faith. It's also important to note Robert Parra could have exercised. There was some conditions back when the lease was written, I don't know, 5-6 years ago, where it was a lease that was written in like 05, and in-game venues, the in-game and the arena experience in 2019 was very different than in 2005. So because some conditions weren't met there, they actually could have exercised an opt-out and they could have left then. They chose not to. They worked out a deal. And every time that they have been presented a moment to work out a deal, they have done so. All right, with all that being said, here are concerns I have. Tim, how many times have you seen, like, we've seen renovations done in phases. I don't know if I've ever seen the financing of renovations done in phases over 10 years for the pro game. Typically, you either borrow the money up front and you try to pay it all at once, but like the staggered renovations doesn't make me feel great. But secondly, I keep wondering this. Is the NBA, like the NBA, I feel like more than most of the other leagues, I know it's happened in all the other leagues, but the NBA feels like the most, if you're in a spot you don't really like, it's the one that ups and leaves the most. And, okay, with the Sonics moving to Oklahoma City, I think you have to say thumbs up. But a lot of these moves, they've been kind of nothing burgers. Like, you end up being in the same, you're in the same spot, you've just changed locations. What I wonder about the NBA is, are they ever going to acknowledge, yes, you're the youngest of all the sports leagues, but now you are starting to, like, build roots in cities, and you're starting to have history in cities. And I just keep wondering if they're ever going to think about that because, all right, let's say you take and move. Let's say you move the Grizzlies. Honestly, I think the Vegas plan is actually way more feasible, but everyone always throws out Seattle. But the reason why I think Vegas is more feasible, if the story is to be believed and the people that are backing it had the money, they were going to build the brand new arena to be an NBA-only facility. Like, they were going to spend all the money. Seattle has never been able to get across that line.
So my question regarding that, and I think this would be a good thing for Memphis, is, yes, those two cities have always been mentioned, but they've also always been mentioned in expansion.
Yeah, so I think how I would describe that is what I think has happened is Silver was after the Timberwolves price was pretty, the Timberwolves and the Mavs sell price was pretty underwhelming. It wasn't bad in the sense of like, hey man, it was still multiple billion dollars, but it didn't go over value. And so with Silver knowing, Silver knew that the Lakers were for sale and he knew that the Celtics were for sale, and he went to bat really hard and made sure those came in over value. Also, see last week, the value, I believe the Blazers were valued around $3.5 billion. They sold for, the valuation was like 4.2. So they've gotten the price up. Where that has complicated matters is it used to always be viewed, and this is why I told anyone, in Memphis, you should root for expansion, 100%. But what they were trying to do was get the sell prices up so that they could have a $6 billion expansion fee. Well, now what's happening in a lot of cities is nobody's willing to, because you have to have, I believe, one person that pays a third up front, like wire transfer. Well, there's nobody that's willing to fork over the cash, especially when they know, like, we can maybe navigate and get a team here. Now, what I would always say is if you're trying to navigate and get a team there, you don't own the team. So you've got to work through that. But what seems to be, I don't know, it was about a month ago. Remember when the NBA owners met and everyone kept talking expansion, 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 and then all of a sudden the news at the end of the meeting was expansion's off the table?
Right.
That's largely my informed speculation is because they have really struggled to get people that want to pay the expansion fee.
Yeah, I would agree. I think now...
And it's also important to note, without the expansion fee, then the financials don't make sense because this isn't going to be like when ESPN, when the SEC, or excuse me, when Texas and Oklahoma, not the SEC first, when they go to ESPN and say, can you still give us a full share if we go and join the SEC? And ESPN goes, yeah. All the partners will just sit there and go, we have the agreement with the NBA. It doesn't matter if you have more teams. So by adding two teams, you're not getting the massive expansion fee that they thought they're going to be getting, and then you're cutting into the media pie, and so everybody's getting a little bit less. Therefore, everyone's making the decision of, okay, well, let's start moving.
If expansion does get tabled, and I haven't heard one way or the other, I think your insight is more knowledgeable than mine, that's where, yeah, I agree with you. I think that's where you get worried because the league wants to be in Vegas. I think that's pretty obvious. And the expectation is, as you pointed out, here in Vegas, that they would build a NBA-only arena, which kind of seems a little crazy to me, considering T-Mobile is relatively new and it's
they
right
don't
there
like that's
on the
I will
strip.
Say this. The NBA, now, exceptions can always be made. The biggest problem with Seattle was going to be the second tenant. And they would be the second tenant because doesn't MGM have a stake in the Knights?
I believe so, yeah. It's right there in the thick of all the MGM properties. So I don't know where that stadium would be.
My understanding is
they're building the baseball stadium right there.
It's going to be it's going to be just south of Mandalay Bay.
Okay. And there's if that's the case,
there's room
there. There's a golf course right on the other side of the highway. They did make, for those who haven't been, Allegiant Stadium where the Raiders play is on the opposite side of the strip, but there is a walkway bridge so you can go to the MGM properties and walk.
Yeah, when last time I was at Mandalay Bay, you can walk through the air conditioning of Mandalay Bay. You go outside, go over that bridge, whatever.
Yeah, it's pretty convenient. And then they've got a couple parking lots for tailgating, et cetera, but it's more of a, you go to the casino and you walk over. So I don't know exactly where it would be. There was thoughts that the baseball stadium would be on that side of the highway as well. That is not happening. It's going to be built on the strip. So I'd be curious to see if the basketball arena comes to fruition, where that ultimately would be located. There's plenty of room here in the desert, believe it or not. So they would find space for it. But yeah, if there's no expansion, that's where I think you get worried. My question to you would be this, and I know you're much more in the weeds with Memphis, obviously, but what's the situation with New Orleans? That seems to be just an absolute dead franchise.
Okay, so the situation with New Orleans, though, is that Benson's second wife has largely taken control, and as long as she's alive, she will not be initiating a move. Now, what I think is interesting about that is that they don't even have plans to renovate their arena, and their arena, like, Tim, I'm not kidding, it's the worst NBA arena I've ever been in. Like,
it was funny, I was thinking, about, I don't know, 12, 13 years ago, I was planning a bachelor party for my best friend from college, and we wanted to go to a city that had a professional sports team, so we'd go to a game and obviously enjoy the nightlife.
Mm-hmm.
And we had floated out in New Orleans, and I texted someone like, oh, don't go to New Orleans. Like, if you're trying to go to a sporting event, don't go to New Orleans.
Unless, unless it's the Saints game.
Right. It was March,
yep.
So it was like, if you're going to go to a Pelicans game, he's like, no, don't do that.
And again, this isn't here to be like, I'm not here to crap on New Orleans. I'm just telling you, like, I have been to multiple events in that arena, and even, like, people in New Orleans will tell you, like, the arena stinks. Now, the difference, though, is you do not have ownership that's motivated. Now, she's not young. I think you also need to root for, but I think she's already kind of gotten through this, the kids from the first marriage. Like, you always need, like, a good internal squabble. Because in the end, that's why the Celtics came about. The son and the dad, based on, I don't know if it was inheritance, or the dad's remarried. Then you got a good old-fashioned family squabble, and all of a sudden stuff comes up for sale. The other thing, though, is so San Antonio has also said, hey, we are not renewing our lease with the artist formerly known as the AT&T Center. I think it's like Frostbank. I can't remember what it is now. And they want to move downtown in another area that is basically, you know, they want to move downtown and, like, control the whole area around it, which is what all these franchises want. But it's a lot like, you know, they want to control it, but they don't want to pay for it. So you run into that issue. But this is the other thing I was thinking about. And I view myself as a pragmatist and a realist. But, like, at a certain point, when are we just going to acknowledge, like, I think Frostbank was built 1 year after the Forum. Tim, these arenas are, like, once they turn 20, we just announce they're done. Like, they're done. Like, and I get it. Like now the flip side of this is, and I'm not trying to be, like, pie in the sky, naive, like, oh, it should be like this. The Oklahoma City Thunder, before they won the championship, they knew their arena was a problem, and they roll up their sleeves and they go, all right, boys, here's $1 billion. Here's a new arena. I understand to a certain point, like, that's the cost of doing business. Now, the reality is Memphis doesn't have that option. Like, I don't even think if they even tried to secure the funding via loans and whatnot, like, I don't think they could ever get the money. But I am, like, sitting there going, like, how many of these arenas that we're actually renovating really need renovation?
That's a good question. It does feel like they don't age well like baseball stadiums. Now, on the flip side, the Braves did exactly what you said. They were like, all right, 20 years in this thing, we're out. We're going to get a new stadium out in the suburbs.
And where they could control the land around it.
Right.
Yeah, it does. I mean, it seems like football stadiums and baseball stadiums. Although, I mean, think about this. I think the Georgia Dome opened in 94. I mean, what? They tore that thing down within 25 years? When did
Washington Stadium opened in 96 or 97, and they want to desperately get out of that.
I'm also in. That's one where I plant my flag, and I'm like, the fact that we, in our nation's capital, we don't have a cool stadium that, like, you can. I mean, I get where the Nats is, but the fact that we don't have a football stadium where you can see all the monuments, like, I'm in favor of that.
I totally agree. I mean, look, the old location, it's just, look, that's a whole complicated mess.
Well, that's also the other thing is
federal land.
Well, you start to get into this thing where, you know, because the Braves did it and it was successful, hey, why don't you move it out where all the rich people are? And my whole deal is like, well, that was a movement that was very popular in the 90s when NFL teams were trying to build stadiums, but they were doing it so that these owners could control all the land around it. Like, it wasn't just, oh, this is the best spot for a stadium. And I will just always point out this. Even if you have a higher concentration of rich people, when you have a downtown arena where you need many, many events throughout the year, you need to be in a population center where there's population density. Like, that's just the economics of that always work a certain way.
So back to Memphis.
I mean, honestly, you want to know my pipe dream?
Yeah.
So Elon is running his supercomputer from here. And I hope you're sitting down for this. There's some people that don't like Elon's role in the election. And they...
Does he like his role in the election?
I think he would still say net positive, but it's a fair question. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. Like, but I mean, that was the classic, like, who could have ever foreseen that happening?
Yeah, shocking.
Like, two megalomaniacs. Like, who could have ever seen that happening? Now, with that being said, there's some people that are, like, attacking him, and they're kind of doing the reverse engineered argument where it's just like, we don't like him, so we're going to figure out the ways to complicate all this. I mean, if Elon wants to get in the sports game and just, like, maybe donate $500 million, just like just a rounding error for him, like, all of a sudden, everything Elon's done is like, I will guarantee him every criticism will go away. Yes, is that probably some form of corruption? Yeah, but I've got eyes on the prize. I want a new arena.
Now, other pipe dream, can you figure out a way to get a job and pull a Michael Bolton and just take some of the roundoffs and just put it into a different bank account?
Oh, like the when you and I were growing up, it was like the urban legend how somebody became a millionaire, which was they understood writing computing code and they took the rounding errors of bank transactions and they became a billionaire.
Yes, like Office Space. That was what I was trying to.
Yeah. Well,
a lot
I mean,
of Office Space, but he had a mistake and then.
Yeah, you got to cover your tracks, but I actually think. Somebody,
a mundane detail, Michael.
Somebody brought that one back like in the last 6 months. And I was like, oh, it's good to see that's back. Like that form of fraud. Like, I got no time for
just a little fraud.
Like, I got no time for the scams where you're calling up, you know, old people and you're trying to say, I'm Alexa Bliss and I'm hot. Do you want to marry me? Here, send $500,000. I got no time for those. But like the good old fashioned rounding errors, like, yeah, come on. Talk me into that. I have committed to playing the lottery religiously, and I have said if I do win the lottery, I will siphon off enough money to where my wife has to get off my back for the rest of our lives, and then I will take the rest and find a casino that's willing to let me put it on black and see if I can double it, and I think I can make up the difference that way. Again, there's a few details between that, but like this also comes back to like, this predates you being here, but like this all starts when the mayoral administration went and lobbied for the state government to use some of the surplus to get money for the Liberty Bowl renovations and FedEx Forum renovations. I said this in real time, and so far I'm one for one. If they really thought the only reason that Memphis wasn't in the Big 12 was the stadium, they were listening to the wrong people. Well, we're going to wind up with two underwhelming renovations, and now they've put the Grizzlies in jeopardy. Doesn't mean it's a certainty. Doesn't mean there's not time to figure it out. But, yeah, that 200-something million would have gone pretty nicely. Because that's... In fairness, the other complicating factor was when they actually secured the money that they secured was going to be enough to do the renovation that was going to satisfy all parties. Well, the pandemic happens and building costs go up like 6x. And if you've noticed, everyone's putting building projects on hold. Except for people in Vegas. I feel like it's been a while. When's the last time you had a new casino or a new skyscraper high rise? I feel like I haven't seen one.
Resorts World opened up about 3 years ago.
Is that the last one?
No, Durango was not. It's not on the Strip, though.
When did the Sphere open? Because Sphere opened after Resorts World.
A couple years ago.
Yeah, y'all need to get on it. And
well,
take
Resorts World was not a has not been a massive success. It's not at a great look. Oh, Fountain Blue.
Oh, yeah.
Where Fountain Blue was had been built, and they need someone to like. They just stopped building it. I don't know what year they. That was before me, because I remember driving by it when I got to town in 2020. I'm like, what the hell is that thing? They're like, oh yeah, they were gonna build this casino, and they just stopped building it. But yeah, the Fountain Blue opened. That was the most recent opening here downtown.
Yeah, so you got Fountain Blue. I always could not believe, like when I saw Resorts World going up, I was like, wait a minute. How are they not getting sued to oblivion by Wynn? It's like, what if we make a Wynn tower, but we attach it to another Wynn tower? That's gonna get by, right?
I will say.
Then they painted it red.
If you do come to town, Durango, which is off the Strip, it's one of the local casinos. It is.
Awesome. John Martin was at Circa last week.
Awesome.
He was singing the praises of Circa and the elevators.
Circa is very nice.
He was speaking the praises. All right.
I'm there every day.
Enough of the depressing stuff. Let's make fun of the Big Ten. We'll do that next right here on Jeff Wright & Company, 92.9 FM.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a great conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey everyone, I'm Josh Radner, and I am so excited to tell you about How We Made Your Mother, a rewatch podcast looking back at How I Met Your Mother. And I'm here with Craig Thomas, who co-created the show along with Carter Bays. Hi, Craig.
Hey, Josh. Somehow it has been 20 years since the show premiered. I'm going to check the math on that. 10 years since it went off the air, and we thought that made this a perfect time to look back, see what the hell we did, and why the show still seems to resonate with fans around the world today.
Follow and listen to How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcast.
ESPN. We've had more starting quarterbacks announced, and also we got a return of one of the sports center greats of Tim and Mai's youth back last night. So we'll talk about that and more during the list. Tim, I also wanted to look up, I just wanted to make sure Hank Bachmeier. Let's see if I just do covering. Okay, if you throw out FCS teams.
Oh, yeah, we brought this up the other
day. Yeah, one. I'm sorry. If you make it just, if you throw out the FCS teams, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. He had failed to cover 12 of 13 straight. So for those that are curious why I want to know, I need to know if Bear Bachmeier, if I need to know if not covering the spread is genetic.
However, it is worth noting, I don't know the spread off the top of my head, but I got to imagine they were a decent underdog. He did lead the Broncos to a win and cover in Tallahassee in his first career start.
All right, let's see.
That was
You're right,
August 31st, 2019.
So he actually, that's a Boise stat though.
Correct.
This is my favorite part. He is, in his career, he was 18-29-3 against the spread. And of those 18 wins, 18 covers, 14 came at Boise. Okay, so just wanted to throw that one out there. All right, we got this. This was over the weekend, and this was the classic. When you read the headline,
I kind of viewed this as there was a story maybe in the spring, and I'm trying to remember the specifics of it, but you and I talked about it. Someone said something stupid, the person apologized and did so like sincerely, and everybody moved on. And it was nice to like have one of those moments where like everyone just kind of acted rationally, like the apology was accepted. Oh, I'll tell you what it was. It was Sabalenka after the French Open. I always say the biggest mistake in tennis is do not give the microphone to the loser first, but that's what they do because they present the runner up first and then the champion. So Sabalenka went off like, she didn't beat me today. I lost. Like, Coco wouldn't even have beaten Iga. And Coco then was like, I beat Iga last time we played. But there was all that. She was fired up. She lost. She played badly. She lost. They put the microphone in front of her, and she did what an athlete would do, particularly in an individual sport, went off. She then apologized sincerely. Coco accepted the apology. We moved on. Like, that was, like, one of those ones where I was like, okay, it's nice to see when I think the reaction fits, like, what actually occurred. Saturday and Sunday and even into yesterday, when you saw the reaction to the 24 or 28, which my favorite part of a proposal is, didn't even bother hammering out the specific numbers. Like, what if we just 24 or 28? Like, we didn't even bother to get that number down pat. But when you actually throw something out there that is objectively stupid, when everyone basically agrees that's dumb, that was kind of heartwarming.
I was on air when this news came out, and I can't believe that this was actually thrown out there. But as I said on my show on VSiN, and I will say till I'm blue in the face, and it's not just college football, it's a lot of other sports, Rob Manfred. Why do the people that run sports hate the sport that they run?
So I've actually, I think this makes sense.
Which does?
Here would be my explanation. I don't know necessarily, because like the more I've heard Manfred speak, he says more things that I think are less dumb, but his actions are very dumb. What I think has transitioned, look at who everyone is hiring for these commissioner roles. We've gone from the era where it was either an athletic director or an administrative type to now the guys that are getting hired and the gals that are getting hired are largely television executives. And if you actually take a step back and say, what are these people doing? All they're trying to do is create more TV inventory, because I think the reality is, and I even actually think the NFL acknowledged this when they took that stake in ESPN and now they have a stake in CBS. I think there's a tacit agreement. If your way of making more and more money every 10 years is to get a new TV deal, I think everyone has come to the realization, hey, who knows what the landscape looks like, but it's entirely possible we have tapped out as far as we can go. And so when they start thinking about how can we come up with more revenue, and the easiest way to get it is TV, they have to start creating more TV events. And if you look at what they're all doing, it's they're all trying to create more TV events.
Well, I would agree with that. And to me, we have created some great TV events. Look at the week one schedule. We have three top 10 games in week one. And the Big Ten really feels like they are just full on. Well, initially, as we thought, right before those meetings took place in Destin, where we thought the SEC and the Big Ten were going to be singing kumbaya, yeah, this is a great idea, let's do these auto bids. And then, as we've discussed ad nauseum on this show, the coaches at the SEC meetings were like, no, this is dumb. So the SEC flipped their tune. Big 12 has agreed with that 5-11 thought process. And they, for whatever reason, maybe it's, well, I know why. They want the SEC to play 9 conference games. That's their whole thing. And now they've put together this absolutely ridiculous playoff model proposal. I don't even know where it is.
So I want to give people the idea, like, when, because everyone,
I don't know if it was a proposal. I think it was more of a spitball.
Here's how it happened. The Big Ten had a meeting of the athletic directors and Petitti, the commissioner. And he presents this as an option, and I believe he referred to it as like back of the napkin idea. And they all signed off on it, like, good. And that was basically giving him approval to take it to Sankey and to get SEC feedback. What I think then happened is everyone in the SEC said, get a load of this, and they couldn't wait to tell any media type they knew because they knew what the reaction would be. So here's why I say all of that. There's no question in my mind ESPN is probably the single biggest influence on the SEC, but it is a very different thing than Fox is with the Big Ten. Fox is essentially shadow running the Big Ten. With the SEC, where the complications arise, and sometimes it works for the worse, sometimes it works for the better. But the deal with the SEC is Alabama's vote counts the same as Vandy's. And when you, the Big Ten can operate a little more autocratically, and they can kind of say, like, here's what we're doing, get in line. Whereas the SEC, it's more of a Democratic thing. And I think what tends to happen is, if you look at most of these ideas that come from the Big Ten, it's all about creating these new additional television games late in the season with stakes. And that's what TV wants. And as a lifelong TV consumer, I'm not here to say, like, these people are all evil, but I do know that this is true. Made-for-TV sports is not as good as pure competition. And when you start... when you start just making everything convoluted so that you can have a big additional game to sell, the other factor that is in all of this, obviously, is all these schools are scrambling with, oh my God, how are we going to pay for all of this? And so it puts them in a desperate spot of, we need all these ideas. And then you realize, like, most of the ideas that you need, it's really like a result of, I think the other thing that's so ironic and aggravating to me is, if you had to list out all the problems that you, like, if you're someone, and I am to a certain degree, you're worried about the long-term health and stability of the sport, where would the playoff format rank for you? Let me throw out this condition. I think the floor is where we are right now, which is the 12-team playoff. Maybe we screw with seeding again if the SEC winds up getting left out, an extra team left out. Maybe we screw with that again. But, like, if the floor is we're going to have a 12-team playoff, because I don't – can you ever think of an example of someone that expanded their playoff and then went back to a smaller one? The closest thing I could come up with was the PGA Tour, and their playoff is – their playoff is not serious. Their playoff is a redistribution of money. But once upon a time, they had 4 playoff events. Now they have 3. But I don't think that's an apples-to-apples comparison.
No, and it's like people yelling about replay.
Exactly.
Like, it's never going away.
Yeah.
We're just going to get more of it in our lives. But
the hope is we figure out a more efficient way to do it. Yeah.
I've come to the agreement or the understanding. And, like, look, it's like getting mad about realignment. Like, you can get mad about it, it's not going to change, right? This is the way it's ultimately going to be. If we go to 28 teams, and I get it, FCS does what, 24? It's just, it's different though. And FCS has shorter seasons. I just, like, who out there is excited? Like, do you realize the teams that make the playoff last year Michigan makes the playoff last year. Iowa makes the playoff last year. Does anybody... The expansion of the playoff is not going to expand the number of teams that can win.
Yeah, my question is always, did we last year? You can make an argument of who deserved to be 12. However, you know what I mean? Like, if you want to be that, did we leave out a team that was going to win the national title or could have realistically won the national title?
Maybe Alabama.
Do you really believe that?
I mean, they did beat Georgia. I'm just the upside.
If that game goes on another 10 minutes,
For sure.
Yeah.
No, I'm saying maybe.
I think Alabama for sure could have won a game. I do not think Alabama was winning the national title.
Right. But I think to me, and I've always been, when the 12 team initial format was thrown out there however many years ago, I immediately looked at it and said, oh my God, that's amazing. Because we've got on campus games, which we got, and I know the games weren't competitive, but the build up to those games, especially the Notre Dame game on Friday, was one of the best things we've had in a while, in my opinion.
I totally agree. That Friday was
the
one
build
of
build up to 3 hours of College game day in the bitter cold, iconic location. And I'm not just saying this because I'm a Notre Dame fan. I thought the build up to that game was exactly what the sport needed. The game was a bit of a dud, but the build up to it was what you wanted. You got a big quote from Kirk Cignetti and all of that. It just, to me, if you get to 24-28, like what are we doing? I can live with 16. I can live with 16, and I think that's the reality of where we're headed. And it does feel like to me, Jeffrey, that the Big Ten was like, you know what? They're not giving us what we want. Let's throw out even stupider stuff. And maybe they'll just be like, fine. We'll do your 4-4-2-2-1-1, whatever.
Yeah, I just think, though, that they are... I think they're... Like, my thing is, the SEC has been willing to capitulate on things.
I mean, five?
But this
ACC
is...
ACC teams? Well, five.
Well, I mean, my whole deal is... There will be no illusion. If they went to something that even vaguely resembles that, you cannot make the argument that the regular season is intact.
And that's the problem, right? And we've talked about this with Blake before. I still, with the 12-team playoff, I still contend that college football is the best and most important regular season product in sports. You think at the end of November, the games that we got of vital importance. And yes, you could make the caveat, Ohio State lost their regular season finale. They didn't get punished. Okay, I'll listen to it. But you can also point out that the Big 12 championship for years kind of was meaningless. And there was a vital importance to that game. It was win or go home for the college football playoff, right? So I just feel like at 12, we're in a sweet spot. We've tweaked it a little bit, right? Where
yeah, this is my other thing, to your point. Can we at least see what this... Like, my thing is, I think if we fix the seating, I think it actually solves a lot of the problems that we had last year. I think most of the problems that... Well, let me phrase it. With the exception of the length of time, that's not been solved. But in terms of the competition, what I think actually screwed it up was the fact that by having to do the weird rigged seating that we did, it ended up making those first four games wildly uncompetitive. I actually think there's a decent chance, I don't know, maybe an underdog might cover one of these four games this year.
I agree. And last year, I believe...
Like, do I have high hopes for 5-12? Not really, but do I have pretty high hopes for 7-10? And do I have for 8-9? I do.
Well, the funny thing is, last year, if we had had the bracket break like we will this year, I think we would have had better first-round games because we would have had Indiana against Boise State, I believe, and that would have given us a, I think, a pretty competitive game between those two teams. We would have had SMU and Tennessee. I think Tennessee fans would have much preferred that. Ohio State, is that right? Alabama?
No, Bama would have been
out.
Still
Bama's still out. Still out.
It would have been Ohio.
No, it would have been Ohio State or Arizona State, which, I don't know, Arizona State took Texas to double overtime. And then we would have had Notre Dame Clemson, which I think that probably would have been competitive. Yeah, I'm with you, man. Like, it took us so long to get to 12 and to taste this home field feeling in December. And we're immediately like, we got to add more. Like, why?
Because they lost a lawsuit. They had to settle a lawsuit. Like, in the end, that's like, why is all this? Like, everyone's trying to scramble to pay for everything.
And I get it, right? If they...
Oh, no. I think we lost Tim. So we'll let...
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey everyone, I'm Josh Radner, and I am so excited to tell you about How We Made Your Mother, a rewatch podcast looking back at How I Met Your Mother. And I'm here with Craig Thomas, who co-created the show along with Carter Bays. Hi, Craig.
Hey, Josh. Somehow it has been 20 years since the show premiered. I'm going to check the math on that. 10 years since it went off the air, and we thought that made this a perfect time to look back, see what the hell we did, and why the show still seems to resonate with fans around the world today.
Follow and listen to How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.